right, everybody. So today, back on the podcast, Alex Leonidas. How we doing, man?
What's up? I'm doing great. How are you, Dave?
I'm good, man. I'm trying to think. I think we've had you on two podcasts, but they might have both been paired with Jeff. I'm not sure. This might be the
Every
first
time,
solo.
I think it's our first one-on-one.
All right. Well, cool, man. So a lot of stuff to talk about. I was actually curious. So I see your channel now is Alex Leonidas, right? It's not Alpha Destiny. How long ago was that change made?
Ooh, maybe 4 months ago. It's
Okay,
when I
so
hit
it is
300,000
pretty
followers.
recent. Okay. And what was the kind of rationale behind that?
Well, the reason behind it was when I created the Alpha Destiny name, I was a cringy little teenager who
Yeah.
wanted to be an alpha male. And I used to talk about things besides fitness, and I was
Yeah.
still trying to find myself. Didn't really, I mean, you're young, right? So I came up with that name. I thought it was the most badass name. You know what? To this day, it's still pretty cool in its own
Yeah.
right, fulfilling your Alpha Destiny. But eventually I just grew past it. Like, especially the way the manosphere has evolved. I mean, I don't know if this is the right place to talk about this, but I just see a bunch of black-pilled incels and
Right.
misogynists and very negative individuals. And it's always associated with that word alpha. So I don't want to be
Right.
associated with that. And at the end of the day, what am I here to do? Educate, inspire, talk about fitness. That's what I do best, right? So let's just bring it to strength training, bodybuilding, getting the best body of your dreams. It has nothing to do with these extra things that I'm seeing, especially some figures now that are coming out. I'm glad I changed that name. And,
Yeah.
you know, I have a cool name as well. My full name is Alexander Leonidas.
Right.
So why not represent the Greek side?
Yeah.
It plays well in the branding and it shows people that this is the new me. And that is also demonstrated in my content. I'm always leveling up, buying new cameras, new microphones, enhancing my video quality. I just, like, honestly, I just want guys that have the best viewing experience and learn as much as they can and just continue to grind. And the only way I can do that is if I'm fully myself, not having any other associations with things that aren't pertaining to what I'm actually passionate about.
Yeah, man. No, I'm all for it. I think, first of all, like you said, your name is very badass, right? Alex Leonidas is such a perfect name for the fitness industry.
Thank you.
So you have that going for you already. And then secondly, I agree. I mean, alpha unfortunately has this negative connotation these days, right? Where people who talk about being alpha, it's almost inevitable that they're not what is really like an alpha male. And
total
I don't
opposite.
follow that whole scene, but I know there's like men going their own way and incels and all that stuff. And it's just, you know, you can go down like a pretty negative rabbit hole. So I think that's a nice distinction you've made. And even on the point of changing the content, you know, it's great that you're still with like the fitness as your core, because you do see people actually like the YouTube channel Alpha M. It's got like 5, 10 million, whatever it is. It's a huge channel. And he started as, I believe, like a style channel. And of course, there's only so many times you can tell somebody you got to have these two or three key suits and you know, whatever. And so now he's getting into like, you know, how to make your stuff look bigger and like, you know, how to have women never say no and all these things where it's like, I'm sure it'll get a lot of clicks, but it's probably not what the original intent was. And now it's just like, how can you just get more and more? So I'm sure if you talked about some of those cringy things, it might grow your channel, but I'm glad to see you're kind of sticking with the fundamentals.
Yeah, it also depends what you like, what you're really good at. You know, in my case, it's not just bodybuilding. I've done powerlifting, general strength training, calisthenics. So the fact that I'm the jack of all trades allows me to dive into all these various topics. And if I were to ever start a second channel, like realistically, what could I talk about? Well, maybe some success as I've grown older. You know, I think I'm, you know, I've read a lot of books. I've experienced some things. 10 years ago, I couldn't have done that because I didn't have the experience, right?
Yeah.
But that could be a possibility, I suppose, you know, because there's that mind-body connection with the training. Maybe gaming, but that's kind of a, you know, a little nerd passion, and potentially a camera channel just because I use the equipment all the time. But at the end of the day, like, where are you putting in your hours?
Sure.
Where have you invested your 10K hours and beyond? And for me, it's fitness, you know, training. It's a lifestyle. It's every day from nutrition to going to the gym, filming yourself. So everything is, it's not even doubled down. It's tripled down in terms of the reviewing that you get with this lifestyle. So just stay in your lane. I think that's the best advice I can give anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough when you want to branch out from the channel, because obviously people subscribe to you for a certain reason. I think the second channel as an option makes sense.
Yeah.
And sometimes you'll be surprised by how some people I'll see, they'll have a second channel, and you'd think because they're such a huge name, their second channel will be huge, but it's a completely different niche. And so it doesn't really, and it's tough with, like, I know you don't necessarily have like an official podcast, but you do bring people on occasionally to interview and whatnot. And so like for me, there's certain topics that it's like clearly fitness. And then there's like, okay, it's like generally health. And that's still for my channel works pretty well. But then there's stuff like maybe psychology that I find very interesting. It's starting to branch out. And then there could be something like, you know, like politics or finances that would be so out of the realm. Like I would like to talk about it, but it's not necessarily, you know what I mean?
And it's not going to be reciprocated. Your audience is going to be like, what is this?
Right,
you know?
Right, yeah.
Even if you're talking about the psychology of lifting, the fact is it's not as physical and guys don't want to hear that.
Right, right, for sure. So you just competed, right? First time getting that lean, right? So let's talk about it. You know, how long was that process? I actually reached out to you a few months ago and we kind of agreed, all right, probably better to do it when everything's done, right?
I was not going to be able to give you my full attention. I was a complete zombie, a douchebag to everyone around me.
Really?
And, you know, even when I collaborated with the RP, like I was just there, like trying to complete that workout. The process lasted a good 6 to 7 months. I say that range because there was a 1 month diet break. And that's something I highly recommend if you're trying to get single digit. So when I got down to the 160s, I chilled, went on a mini vacay, and then the diet resumed. So total 7 months, you know, to lose 50 pounds. At the start, it was very rapid weight loss, but that's due to water weight and because you can get away with it. When your body fat is above 20%, and I don't know what I was at, I might have been 23, 25%. You're not going to lose any muscle. You can get a bit more aggressive. So it started off that way. And then when I became generally lean, then it was a lot slower. And towards those last 10 pounds, wow. People have no idea how hard it is. Like, it's one thing to get a lean, generally defined six pack, but a single digit where you look completely gaunt, you can see your bones literally popping out of your face. Right. You don't have an ounce of fat to pinch. Like, if I pinch my hand, that's how your abs feel. And you can see the veins in them without even flexing. To get to that level, oh, God. Like, it's really the last month and a half, 2 months. And you have to continually adjust your calories. So,
yeah. How low did you get?
1350.
Okay. With refeeds?
No, I dropped the refeeds at the end.
For how long?
For a good 3 weeks. And those were the worst 3 weeks of my life. So, you know, at the start, it was about 3,500, 5,000 calories when I was bare mode, obviously, living the good life. And then it got down to the mid 2000s. And then as I got leaner, 2,300, 2,100, next thing you know, 1,800, 1,500. And then the finale, just to reveal that final look, 1,350. That wasn't very long, though.
Yeah.
That was like a week, you know? And the diet was very high protein at that point. Not because carbs make you fat. That's a complete myth. And I'm not going to talk about fad diets because I don't entertain that. But because you can't afford the extra calories. You can't get away with it. Your macros are essentially between 160 and 200 grams of protein, between 30 and 50 grams of fat, and about 80 to 100 grams of carbs. That's all you can realistically consume. You can't throw in extra carbs. So the diet was very, very clean. I weighed everything. I even weighed like those low calorie milks. I weigh like 50 milliliters of that stuff, man. Yeah. So 10 calories makes a difference. 20 calories, psyllium husk, 7 grams of powder. I would weigh that. Everything. And it was a complete nightmare. And like, it almost ruined my life. People, I had no energy to do anything, bro. I've said this before, but the hardest thing to do was walk. It was easier to lie down and bench 225 for reps than walk 5 minutes outside.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know I went all over the place there, but
no. How light did you get body weight wise?
How low did I get?
Yeah.
So the lowest I ever recorded was 147.5, but that was with the maximum depletion.
Yeah.
It was really about 148. And then,
you
know, when I ate a bit, I was up. My stage weight was 150 official. Close off on the scale, 150. And I assume 7% body fat or so.
Yeah.
So
that, I mean, dude, that's big because you're 5'5", right?
Yep. 5'5", officially confirmed by the
Okay.
CPA.
You know, we kind of talk about, like, you know, the average natural bodybuilder is like, you know, 5'10", 165 on stage. Like, that's like roughly what you see a lot of times. And not even just average. I mean, like, that's what Brad Loomis competes at. That's what like Gilberto Nunes compete at. Now, they get crazy, crazy lean. But still, like, that's very typical. And, you know, they say every inch is about 5 pounds roughly, right? Like,
yeah,
you
well, that's what you see in the when you sign up for competition, it gives you the ranges that you're allowed. It's literally that, 5 pounds added per height. I
Right,
think I
right.
was, the max I can ever hit is either 165 or 170. I think it's 170. I'm not allowed to be for classic physique
For
because they
classic.
cap you.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, people, they look at me, they're like, how do you weigh that much, that little? And I'm like, I'm not that tall, bro. And also,
right.
guys don't know how much fat they have to lose. It's not just because of my height. It's because people aren't jacked.
Well,
Because if I was 190 pounds with abs, and your average guy does not have abs, okay, and they're average height, that means they'll have to weigh less than me on stage. That's just a fact. Now that I've been single digit, I understand the differences. It's not the same.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
and
it's
if you
definitely
plug in my numbers in the FFMI calculator, it's like 24 stage weight. So
Yeah.
it's a lot of muscle.
No, honestly, if anything, when you said the numbers, I was surprised at how heavy it was. I thought you were going to tell
Wow.
me it was like 140 or something, because I'm just so used to people being so surprised. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But no, that, like, 150 at 5'5 is big, man. And
I
anybody who says,
appreciate
like, I
that.
can't believe that, it's like, well, they're just not used to hearing the weights then. You know, I mean, dude, I'm 6'1. And if I was to get stage lean, I'd probably be like 170. You know, if you were
Yeah.
6'1, like, proportionally, I mean, you'd be looking in like 185 or something. So
It's hard to imagine that.
it's a big guy, man. And also,
Yeah.
obviously, people are skewed when they hear
Well,
non-natural numbers. So
I talked to some of the guys backstage, and I'm going to release some of the stage photos soon. Additional ones, the high quality, because you're not allowed to bring your camera in there. They don't want that, you know, so you
Oh,
got to pay
really?
for your, yeah. But anyway, one of the guys was 137, and he's been training for just as long as I have,
Yeah.
you know, 30 years old, looked amazing, competed several times. You would never know looking at him. So
Never know that he's been training so long, you mean?
no, you would never know that he could weigh so little.
Oh, gotcha.
And
Okay.
even Dr. Mike was telling me, like, nobody gives a damn what you weigh. It's how good you look, and it's the proportions. And even my arms, they were a mere 15 and a half inches. Those aren't massive arms, right? But when you can see every detail, the bicep and the brachialis separation and the freaking long head of the tricep separation, you can see that
Yeah.
from the rear. And then how it ties into the delts, it just makes everything pop out. And even your worst body parts can look amazing. Like, my biceps actually look good on stage.
So remind me, because last time we spoke, you had hit a new arm size. What was that size?
It was 17. Actually,
17.
when I
Okay.
look at the measurement picture now, it was slightly above. It might have been 17.2 or something.
Okay, gotcha.
So I lost a good inch and a half.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that's probably in line with what I typically see. You know, I think Eric Helms has talked about that as well. He gets about 17 in the offseason and in the sub 16, you know,
Yeah.
contest lean. But again, man, I think you're selling yourself short when you say, like, you know, 15 and a half isn't big. People just get to these. I mean, I've talked about this. I'm actually going to
Yeah.
have a video out soon on my new arm goal. But, you know, I'm going to try to get over 17 again. But 15 and a half on 5'5 contest lean is massive, dude. Like, that is huge. I think people lose perspective because, again, obviously enhanced measurements. But
Yeah.
secondly, most people are never contest lean. Like, a
That's
truly
true.
shredded 15 and a half inch arm, even on 5'10, can look extremely impressive, let alone 5'5.
Man, I appreciate you saying that. And to me, it's still everything you're saying makes sense. It's just hard for me to logically process it because I've been comparing myself to all these, you know, elites for so many years.
Sure.
Like Jeff Alberts has 18 inch arms, you know, but they're not my height, you know. But I
Right.
still look at the absolute measurement. I'm like, oh, I want that,
Yeah,
you know.
yeah.
So, but
No,
you're
not for
right.
sure.
It's you got to scale it according to your frame. You know, there's
Yeah.
nothing wrong with that.
And I think Dr. Mike's point about it doesn't matter how much you weigh, like, the only reason I give a little pushback on that is I think it's important for people to understand that, like, you can have people who then stay perma lean because they're just thinking, oh, I look better this way. I look better this way. The reality is, sure, the judges don't actually care about the number, but they do care about how big you are. And how big you are is hugely dependent on how much you weigh.
Yes.
Okay. Even if you have amazing insertions, if you're like 120 pounds, that's a very small human being, right? And I just don't want people to lose sight of the fact that you do have to get to pretty heavy body weights to make progress so that eventually that one day on stage can look your best.
All things being equal, when you're standing on that line, the top three are going to have similar levels of muscle mass and shreds. Mm-hmm. So who's going to win? The one who has the better genetics, maybe, you know, but also the extra pounds of lean tissue. So I was pretty heavy, considering, right? But the guy who won first place, big props to him. He had like 5 pounds of muscle on me. You know, and I know this because I saw what he competed in. He did a double competition, regular bodybuilding and classic. Okay. He was in the weight class above me. Yeah, he was in classic physique, you know? So
Yeah.
That makes a difference. And you can see it when you're doing the side chest. You had bigger hamstrings, slightly bigger biceps. So those minute, you know?
Yeah, sure.
That's what it comes down to.
So you came in second, right?
Yeah, and honestly, I was not expecting a serious contender like that to show up because I really, really gave it my best. I had a hell of a physique, you know?
Yeah.
But this event, it was post-global events, right? And everyone was just hyped up to compete because the one of last year was basically empty. This one was a full house. So it's called the Mike LeMond Natural Classic. It's been around for a long time. And everything was booked from the start. So booked, in fact, that my family couldn't even show up. They couldn't even buy tickets. And most of my close friends, they just showed up to the prelims. So only my girlfriend was able to come to the finals.
Okay.
Just her. But that's because she was really early in on it. You know, the moment I announced it, she already bought it. So it was crazy packed. The lineups were massive. And you're waiting backstage for hours. Like I didn't even know, you know, like you're timing it, right? Because I was self-coached, right? So I bought Dr. Lane Norton's book and I read through it and I'm like, okay, this is how you freaking do it.
Okay.
And I'm timing my meals every 2 hours, then every hour you have the rice cakes and it's so precise.
Yeah.
But then because there's so many guys, you don't know when you're gonna step on stage. So you end up pumping up three times.
Right.
So I think and it sucks because the first pump is the best one. Sure. That's when you're really, you know.
Damn. Wow. So it's really an hours long event. And then
it's all day this thing.
Wow. So for like a natural competition like that, like people have to pay tickets to go essentially if they want to watch. And then
two tickets you got to buy.
Oh, really? And then you have a fee to enter yourself?
I don't. Well, yeah, to sign up for the competition. But I'm not even allowed to go in the finals, like as a spectator. So if I compete and then I go watch, I can't do it. I can only watch backstage.
Wow.
So I have to get my own ticket for that. I mean, that's how it was organized for this particular event. I don't know if it's different elsewhere, but this is the CPA, the pretty large Canadian federation. So
nice, man.
Yeah.
So that was how many weeks ago now? Two?
Oh, that was like 3 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago. Okay.
Yeah.
And how much you weighing now?
you don't even want to know. the post-contest binge is real.
Yeah. I think everybody's first one has got to be. I don't know if I've heard of anybody who hasn't had a significant rebound.
Mm.
Or something. Well, nowadays, they kind of say.
What estimation, like what have you heard on average? What's typical?
What's typical for people to gain post?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you get some people who at the extreme end, you're talking like 40 pounds. I would guess just like trying to look at your body. I mean, I'm only seeing like, you know, shoulders
you can't
up.
Really tell.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not contesting. Nowhere near. Even the veins.
Maybe.
yeah, about that. I gained, the thing is, there's water weight in there too.
Yeah.
So sure, without the water weight, about 170. I probably gained 20 pounds.
Okay.
Yeah.
Without the water weight.
Without the water weight. With the water weight, 175.
Okay.
And it's crazy for me to even say that because that's where I was at months ago.
Yeah.
But this also comes with fast rebound and strength. And the reason why I did that, I could have done a reverse diet. The discipline was there, but it was more so I didn't want to feel like that anymore.
Sure.
When I say being shredded is a nightmare, I can't even, like, I need to continue speaking against this. Obviously, I did a bodybuilding competition. without the assistance of drugs. So this was the only possibility. I don't know what my T levels were at. I don't know what my, if I would have gotten the blood test done, the doctor probably would have freaked out. Like, what is going on with you?
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, I can tell you I had low blood pressure. I think it was 108 over 58, something like that. So both values were not in a good range. And I was like a couple weeks out. It got even lower as I progressed. So
what is your blood pressure normally?
Oh, well, 110 over 70. That's like your optimal zone. Usually around that zone, a little bit higher, actually. On average, I tend to be like slightly elevated, like above that 110 over 70.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, I have to work really hard. You know, I have to eat perfect to get my numbers where they should be.
Yeah.
I'm sensitive like that.
I'm very responsive in a negative way to like blood pressure changes when I diet.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing. Like libido and blood pressure and just heart rate in general all change dramatically for me. Like I'll get warnings on my Apple Watch all the time. You've gone 10 minutes with your heart rate below 40 and like, you know, it'll just kind of like,
really?
Oh yeah. Brian Borstein gets the same thing. Lightheaded, like I'll get orthostatic hypotension, which is when you stand up and you get kind of lightheaded.
Yep.
I get that constantly. So like when I was really young, I was like, you know, 130 pounds. I get that every time I stood up. There was one time it came on faster than I expected. I was like 14, 15. And I stood up out of my bed. And I just lost consciousness for a second and I fell into this like big stereo system I had. I mean, it was like literally half a second, but it was enough for me to lose control. And I was like, Jesus, man. Like I was very skinny, very underfed at the time. So it's real.
Wow. So when you say like having an Apple Watch can be helpful and making sure you don't injure yourself situations like that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm as anybody who's listened to podcasts knows, I'm extremely analytical. I keep that on everything. So because of that, I don't actually love the style of the Apple Watch, but it gives
just
me
just the numbers.
Yeah. It's kind of cool to see it. And I don't think most people need it. I mean, I think it's superfluous. I just like to see it. So for that reason, I have it. And the step count, all that stuff is kind of cool to see.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you think you'll compete again?
You know,
too soon to say.
It's like yes and no. Part of me wants to do it. Like I'd like to, you know, especially if I can brush up on certain things, because you can see what your real muscular weaknesses are when you get stage lean. Before that, I mean, you have an idea, but you can't confirm it.
Yeah.
And what I discovered, I kind of already knew, but my top three worst body parts are biceps, hamstrings, and calves, but especially my hamstrings. I might have had the smallest hamstrings on stage.
Really?
Yep. And that's despite doing a 455 for 9 RDL.
Wow.
So all the powerlifters saying that hinges are enough. No, it's not. I only started doing leg curls during my contest prep. And if I didn't, they would look even worse on stage.
Wow.
So I got to bring those up big time. And my posing, it needs a lot of work. Because I'm extremely stubborn and I went in all this all by myself, I didn't hire a posing coach. I didn't hire anybody for, you know, so I just learned by myself watching videos. So if I can fix that up, work on some of these extra muscle groups, right? Maybe come in 155 stage ready. I mean, I think that would be hardcore. But the thing is, if I compete again, I see two possibilities. Either classic physique, same thing, CPA at the Mike Clément, or WMBF with the big boys.
Maybe
I can try to become a natural pro or something.
Yeah.
But bodybuilding would only be with them because I'm not here to be a bad sport, but specifically in the bodybuilding category of where I was at, there were a lot of fake natties.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Visible gyno, injection marks. Anyone with two functioning eyeballs can see these guys were not legit. So I don't want to, you know,
if I'm doing bodybuilding. Classic or just the bodybuilding aspect?
Just the bodybuilding division for some reason. The classic guys look fine, but I don't know why. The bodybuilders, I can't explain it.
Did they do testing? I mean, obviously testing is not super rigorous, but
it's you know, they could have taken SARMs in the off season or whatever, but some guys got pulled out, but the ones who were really sus. Yeah. I think like 5 guys got tested, but the ones who should have actually been tested.
Oh, just tested.
Like many medals around their neck.
Like,
they should have been tested on the spot, but for some, you know, so.
But when you say they got pulled out, you mean pulled out to test or pulled out of the competition because they tested positive?
I think both.
Oh, yeah. Really?
One guy literally got disqualified.
Oh,
he looked like Michael Hearn. It was, what are you doing showing up here?
Yeah, that's kind of crazy, man. I mean, I guess it happens all the time. It's just strange. Like, I mean, there's a whole set of organizations out there for enhanced competitors. You know, it's different when, like, most sports, that's not an option, right?
That's
So,
right.
like, honestly, you know, if you're a movie star, or you're NFL, like, I kind of expect that you're going to be taking something at, you know, whatever. But, and I don't mean to like just pass it off as no big deal to be using. I understand it. But like with bodybuilding, I mean, you have these clear divisions. Just do the right division, you know.
I don't understand it because there's no money to be made in this. You
Right.
lose a lot of money. You're spending hundreds of dollars just to compete. And most of these guys, they just do local shows. They're not social media influencers. You know, you go on their profiles, they maybe have like 1,000 or 2,000 followers, something like that. They're
Yeah.
not big. And they just work out at some, you know, they're the big man in their local gym.
Right.
So it's like, what are you doing? And it's very insulting. Because we worked very hard to get to that point. We suffered. And when I see these dudes backstage full of energy and life, and they're looking like on a different level, it's like, I want to swear so bad right now, but I'm not going to do that to you. It's just, it's insulting. And
Sure.
I saw, I'm not the only one to point this out. You know, some of the guys I was with, they're like, come on. Like, you can see the disappointment on their face.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, in terms of how quickly to bulk back up, like I said, I'd say that that's pretty common. And like for your height and then weight and everything, I think what you did getting up to 170 makes sense. Did you feel like I guess when I think of, or actually maybe a broader point to make would be that, you know, on the aspect of homeostasis and the body wanting to return, some people they say, oh, there's no set point, there's no settling point, there's, you know, your body, you could just hold on to anything. And the reality is it is amazing and consistently amazes me how much my body, clients' bodies, a lot of bodies will try to stay at a certain point roughly. Obviously, you know, calories in versus calories out matters. Obviously, you can force things to happen. But like for me, it is so easy for me to maintain 195, for example, right? Getting down to 185, not terribly difficult. Getting down below 180, very difficult, right? But even in the other direction, I'm now going up to over 200 pounds, and I'm actually amazed by how much I can just eat, quote unquote, whatever I want. And it's just like, wow, I just like my hunger mechanisms are just crashed, right? Like I just feel never hungry. I'm just constantly like feeling, even though the calories might not be that much more, my body is fighting it. So it feels like I'm eating so much more. Versus if I'm heavily dieted, I could have, you know, 2 days of cheating and it's like, holy crap, I just gained like 7 pounds, you know? And I'm sure obviously you're experiencing something similar.
It's exactly the same experience. It's also like diet fatigue, you know, when you've been suffering for months. It's easy to binge immediately after. Like, it's no coincidence that many natural bodybuilders can put on 20, 30 pounds after a comp. Normally, that would be impossible. Like,
Yeah.
if I'm in the middle, if I'm just lean, generally, I'm not even gonna gain 5 pounds in a month, even if I try to bulk my
Yeah.
life away. But after being shredded, it's a joke. And then there's the opposite extreme, trying to push your body weight to a slightly higher level. You oftentimes have to force feed.
Yeah.
So I do agree with the body fat set point. Over the years, you figure out what that range is, you know. And usually for me, it's that sweet spot, 15, 20% body fat, you know,
Right.
165 to 181. I find when I hit the 190s, I gotta drink a lot more.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm just getting those liquid calories in. And
Yeah.
it's
Yeah,
not.
imagine somebody said to you, okay, now in a month, go from 190 to 210. It's impossible, right? Almost
No, you'd have to
impossible.
go mad. That would be the only way that can work.
Right.
But if you go from 160 to 170 in not even a month, that's doable. So how's that happen? You know, I can't
Yeah.
exp I'm not really an expert on this topic, but
Well, it's something that, you know, I mean, obviously, we're going to have a range of listeners here from people who are totally new to people who have been listening for a long time. But for people who are curious about that, I mean, obviously, part of it is water weight, right? So if you're already at like
yes.
190 in your example, you're kind of at a maximum amount of water weight, right? I mean, not that you couldn't gain more, but, you know, compared to this first
True.
20 or so pounds, huge amount of water weight, right? Your step count slows down dramatically when you're really dieted, right? Versus your body fighting back. You've maybe seen the studies where they overfed people by like 900 to 1,000 calories, and some people actually didn't gain any weight at all, and other
Yeah,
people gained a
because your
ton of
need,
weight. Your need,
exactly.
yeah, variations in need. I always find the hunger thing most interesting because most people who say they have a fast metabolism or slow metabolism, there's not that much variation within humans of a given body weight. Not that there's no variation, mm-hmm. but if we're talking about like base metabolism, not dramatically different. The biggest differences are, again, the movement throughout the day and hunger. It's so common for people to think that they, if they're obese, that they don't eat that much, right? Or if they're really skinny, that they eat all the time.
Hunger is the most important factor. And I called that out years ago. And I see some shredded influencers. They're like, this is my secret. I do intermittent fasting and it's these exact meals that I consume. And it's like, no. The one thing is that you have an appetite of a girl.
Right.
Sorry if I'm being divisive in saying that. You know, I'm not trying to be a douche, but it's the truth. These guys have no appetites. And you see them at the restaurant and it's like, that's an appetizer, what you just say.
Right.
In no way, in no universe, even if I'm shredded, am I going to be satisfied off that?
Yeah.
That's why you're lean, bro. Nothing else. So don't tell me about, I got to buy your secret ebook or coaching services. No. So, and oftentimes these skinny guys, they'll have one big cheat meal. Then the rest of the week, they're starving themselves.
Yep.
So it's like, you don't have a fast metabolism. If you actually track all the calories, you realize that you're either getting way too little or way too much. And I learned, especially when you're trying to push for single digit, you realize, yeah, we eat a lot of food. Like you're 1800, you know, you got to micromanage to get that low. It's very easy to get to 3000 plus, if you ask me. So if a guy is just chilling on 2100, naturally just living his life as a serious lifter, he's been at this for 10 years. And to me, you have a small appetite.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. And like the other day I had, because I'm kind of bulked up right now, I had two 500 calorie meals, my first two. And so it was like 7 o'clock at night. And I was like, I'm at 1,000 calories. I'm not hungry at all. But I normally have a huge appetite. I mean, I've had, you know, 12,000 calorie days many times in my life.
That's and all crazy.
Yeah. the most I've ever had in a day was 18,000, which was like, I used to do these ridiculous cheat days. And that's like documented, recorded. That's not just like, oh, I felt I ate a lot, you know.
How'd you feel after that?
You know, I was actually down a pound the next week, you know, because I was like doing a lot of activity. And again, like a single day, like I don't think you can absorb a lot. I do think there's a point where your body is just going to flush it out. Like it's just not going to absorb.
Just
going
to be on the toilet bowl all day.
Pretty much, right? But no, I would never do that again. I had a period where I was doing like a lot of cheat days when I was younger. But in any case, it's just amazing because now I'm like, oh, I'm 1,000 calories. I'm like full. Because of just I'm pushing up past where I've been in a long time. But obviously, you know, you could be dieted, have 1,000 calories in the first hour and be like, I'm good for another like 2,000 right now. Right. So it's just,
yeah. And that's the problem. Sometimes like you don't want to get too many calories early on because then at nighttime you'll be suffering. You'll be like, darn, I don't have any calories left. And
yeah.
There were days where it would be like 6 o'clock and I'm already tapped out. So I'll have to suffer for the next 6 hours and you're just waiting for midnight to hit. This way you can have a little something.
Oh, really?
A little protein cake before you go to bed. Yeah. So
did you, so that's interesting. So you would actually stay up to take from the next day's calories. Why not just have them and then just make up for it the next day?
Cause I wanted every day to be fully consistent. I didn't want to, I mean, you can look at the weekly expenditure. That's fine.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess I was very anal about that. I wanted it to be perfect, like every day replicated, you know, and that's why I ate the same foods, you know? So,
and how many refeeds were you doing? I know you dropped them the last couple of weeks, but like throughout most.
There were zero at the end. I would do a refeed like every 2 weeks, I would say.
Okay,
and it wasn't the
really,
it wasn't a massive refeed. So it was a guy that I was speaking to. He told me to experiment with, because the refeeds, they matter when you're shredded because you can see if you spill over. So I was shredded a month out before the comp, right? Mm-hmm. So every, you know, I would test, okay, can I handle 200 grams of carbs? Can I handle 250? At what level am I not going to spill over? So that's why I did them. Not so that I could feel better or anything like that. Just to see how I react.
Yeah.
And I found that 250 grams, 300, that was my range where I still looked really sharp.
Nice. Okay. And how much strength did you lose?
I lost a boatload of strength. This is the weakest I've been in years. Like,
yeah, I'm sure.
I can disclose you the numbers. I've never shared this with anybody.
Sure.
Let's do it. This is an exclusive.
Right.
it's so embarrassing for me to share this, Dave, because I'm known for strength. I'm known for bear mode. And, you know, you've seen my PRs over the years, and it's just so my squat was at 405 for nine at the start. Probably could have done 10, to be honest. I look back at the footage. I was just a fat ass who didn't have the work capacity. Anyway, at the end, I had trouble squatting 315 for five.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
With the SSB, though. So that's probably like 340 for five reps, something like that.
Okay.
That's not good.
Wow.
That's terrible for me, okay? My bench, God, I was doing three sets of 10 with three plates off a very small decline. Probably could have done it flat as well, to be honest. Towards the end, I had trouble doing 225 for three sets of six of 10.
Wow.
I haven't done that in years. This is like I'm a teenager again.
Yeah. Jesus.
And my overhead press, I was doing between 135 and 155 for sets of five to six. Not
wow.
that bad. My curls, I was doing 27 and a half pounds off an incline.
Now, most people find that the first time they diet down, the strength loss is the worst, right? And then later on, they can maintain a lot more. At what weight did you find the strength losses really started hitting?
When I got below 158 pounds. So
okay.
It's really when you're getting close to single digit body fat, I would say below 11% or so.
Okay. So you were still pretty strong then up until about that point.
Yeah, most of it was a nice cut. It's when you're getting ready for a competition. That's it. Like if you're generally lean, you're not going to experience that much strength loss. And if you do, you'll regain it in no time at all without having to put on tremendous amounts of fat. So for example, let's say I would have gone down to 165, right? There's some strength loss there, but if I would then go back up to 170, I'd regain 90% of the strength, but I'd still be lean.
Yeah. I would guess that your strength, because you rapidly went up to like 170, I would guess that as of now, your strength at 170 is not as good as your strength at 170 on the way down initially. Is that accurate, or have you already regained it all?
No, I would say it's about the same.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty comparable.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm very surprised at how fast the strength exploded.
Yeah.
I did not foresee this. You know, the other day I did 315 for five on the bench.
Wow.
Up
from
can't explain
225
it.
For like 6 to 10.
Yeah, that fast.
Wow.
I can't explain it, bro. Like, this is beyond. Maybe in a couple months I could rethink this through a bit more, but
yeah,
it's been rapid.
Pretty dramatic. How about your squat?
But I think
what's
it's,
that back up to?
Sorry?
What's your squat back up to?
Well, I did 315 for 10 the other day.
Okay.
It was very easy, though. I probably
yeah.
had like four reps in reserve. So
okay.
Both those two are going up nicely. Where I lost the least amount of strength was actually my deadlift. My hinging strength.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear that quite a bit.
Yeah, but it's odd, you know, that I was still doing good mornings for two plates for reps, even at single digit body fat.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no problems, you know. I had some of the best spinal rectors on stage.
Yeah.
So I think that's what contributed to it.
Wow. And then, so do you remember just roughly, just because I like to see the numbers, when you were at 158, you said you still had a decent amount of the strength and it was that last, let's say, 10 pounds.
Yeah.
Do you remember what the numbers were like at 158?
I mean, everything is written down in my little
okay.
logbook, but like
yeah.
Which numbers?
Like just like the big three.
I probably could have done. Well, I mean, it was still weak for me. My
okay.
bench was like 275 for six, I think.
Okay.
To me, that's weak. That's yeah. I hate saying that. You know,
I only ask because it's interesting for people to hear. Because sometimes when people say, "Oh, like I was still stronger, I didn't lose that much," like those don't have as much meaning as like the actual numbers, right?
Yeah.
And I commend you on the ability to go through that psychologically. I guess because at the end of the day, you know that will come back. But
you know.
Honestly, if I think of, well, there's several reasons I don't have any interest in competing. But one of which is that, you know, you work so hard to make this progress over so many years, and you become tied to the strength. And again, I think you were able to bring a very good package. I just don't even think that I would like how I looked at like contest lean levels, and then it's just gone very quickly. But I think, you know, given that this is what you do, this is like your career and everything, I do think it makes sense. But one of the things, it's very psychologically difficult for me to even lose, to backtrack at all, like even a rep or two. You know, my 2020 cut, I got pretty lean. I dieted down to about 180, and I pretty much didn't lose any strength. It was probably the best cut I've ever done. Wow. I mean, maybe like a rep or two here or there, but it was a very good cut for me. But if I were to go down to, let's say, like 168 and just get peeled, I just think every workout I did would be so mentally tough to see. Like, did you keep the same? It sounds like you kept the same exercises. I know some people will switch exercises so they don't have to mentally deal with it.
Yeah, and that's why I stopped posting so many workouts on Instagram, because it was the same thing essentially every week. You know, and I can even tell you what the routine was. Actually, some things got modified towards the end just because of recovery purposes.
Yeah, sure.
Like you can't, the axial loading, the last 2 weeks I couldn't back squat. I had to do only belt squats. I felt like my spine was going to snap in half. And I'm but I feel you on the psychological destruction. It's very hard, especially when you have an identity surrounded with strength and you're known for certain lifts, and now it's become one of your worst lifts.
Right.
So like, if you could just maintain that slowly on the way down, that's probably a better option just for your mental health, you know?
Yeah.
It's very depressing. You feel it's progressive. It's regressive underload. There you go.
That's the username of one of the RP people. Regressive underload. Yeah. It's hilarious.
Oh my God. But it's legit minus one every workout, you know, 9 reps, 8 reps, 7. Next thing you know, you drop 10%.
Yeah.
Oh, it's god awful. I don't even know what to say about it.
Yeah. But the nice thing is, once you've done it, you can now compare the next times you do it, right? Because you can see, well, this is expected, but I'm only trying. See, like in my mind, it's like I'm trying to beat the best strength, but really it should be, I'm just trying to beat when I was at this body fat last time. So
yeah, well, just like when we talk about when you bulk and cut, your leaner weight's going to be heavier than the previous time.
Right.
And then you can compare, right? It's the same thing with your strength. So yes, you're losing on the way down, but you're still stronger than the last time you were that lean. So you still gain muscle. And also, you know, you got to look at the leverage factor. That maybe you didn't lose that much muscle. You were blessed for a certain lift, you know, and now you have way more range of motion. You're not used to those joint angles, and it's just demonstrating a muscular weakness.
Yeah.
But one thing I want to point out. So Jared Feather gave me this tip. He said, because you're going to get weak as hell, try to avoid variations that allow you to overload and demonstrate your strength in the best way possible. What I mean is, stick to really hard variations that kind of mask your strength. So he gave me the example of the camber bar bench. Favor that off, say, a slight incline as opposed to just a regular flat touch and go bench. Use like obscure, you know how guys who run conjugate, some of them anyway, they're never showing the raw numbers. They're just experimenting with all these weird lifts because maybe they're afraid of showcasing what they're actually at. It's the same thing with bodybuilding. Use variations that you don't care what happens. So when you go to gym, use those hammer strength machines. If you're normally a barbell guy, use the Smith. Use whatever is outside your normal routine, but it's still like it's not a gimmicky movement.
Sure. You know? Yeah, I talk about that a lot all the time because it's so obviously there's a lot of neural adaptation when you get a new exercise, right? And pros and cons, I think as long as you still keep some of the key movements, the problem would be, so like if you think of somebody who is gaining muscle, right? And they are, or even just maintenance, so they switch exercises, there is going to be a huge amount of strength gain in this new exercise that might not mean that you've actually gained muscle, right? You're getting used to it initially. My concern would be if somebody, and I'm not saying Jared said this, but like if somebody were to switch to all new movements and then they started a contest prep, they could probably maintain strength or even gain strength on these exercises,
right,
but possibly lose muscle. They're just not aware of it because they're adapting so well neurologically.
Yeah. That actually happened to me on some movements. The chest crusher, that I'm always using, and the chest expander. I got PRs on both those on the way down, but neurological, you know. And now that I'm regaining the weight, I'm actually getting real PRs. So that's muscle driven and rebounding, whatever. So,
and I don't think people talk about how significant that can be. Again, this was another video that will come out soon. But I've seen this with as basic of movements as like a curl variation. Like I literally was doing standing dumbbell curls, right? This is what I've been doing for years, supinating, like kind of alternating. And I switched, I dropped the weight down by about 10 pounds per dumbbell. And I started doing seated and stricter, right? That's it. Still the same alternating, supinating curl. And over the next 6 months, I'd add a rep here, add a rep there, you know, whatever, whatever. I went back to the standing variation, no stronger at all. After 6 months of quote unquote progress, and you'd think like that's such a basic thing, but I'm just telling you, I've had so many experiences where just a little variation seems like it's progressing. And I'm not against variation at all. I think there's a lot of benefits to variation. I'm just saying, don't, like, you really have to find things. Like for you, you've gone up 405 for 9 squat, right? Obviously your legs are going to be way bigger than when you first hit like 405 for 2, right? Or 355 for 9. So I just think it's important that you're keeping at least a few key movements over time so you can really gauge progress and not just constantly switch.
Yeah. Well, I agree. You don't want to completely change the way you've been training. You know, try to maintain the volume, overall exercise selection. Some things can be swapped out when it gets rough, but the bulk of the program, I would say at least 60% should be that which you're familiar with for reasons you described.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you still, you know, you talk about like the bear mode, and that's kind of what you got known for, right?
Yeah.
And it was like trap training, neck training. Are you still doing a lot of dedicated neck training?
I haven't trained my neck at all in months. And that's, and it shrinks even more when you get contest lean.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. You know what it is? It's like I go through phases. Sometimes I just don't care. You know, the back of my neck tends to be fine. And that's probably from all the SSB work that I do and the good mornings. But the front consistently shrinks. I've noticed for me, it's impossible to maintain any appreciable amount of neck size if I don't isolate it. It is impossible. So anyone who can do it, to me, they must have good genetics. Not a cop-out, but like, I can't do it. I've tried. I've tried over many years.
What did your neck measurement get up to?
Like at its biggest? Peak.
Yeah.
The thing is with the flexing, you know?
Sure,
19 on that, but I don't think it was actually 19. I think it was just the way I might have been low. I might have gotten some trap in there.
Sure.
So it might have been
to measure neck. Yeah. It's, you know, and this was years ago too.
Yeah. But I would say 18, 18 and a half, somewhere around there.
Yeah. That's meaty, man. I mean, it, cause I agree, you know, neck, I think I mentioned this in one of my earlier neck videos, was that it definitely gives a kind of semblance of power, right? Like I remember not even realizing why, but I remember like early high school going through a yearbook and just seeing this one kid and just thinking like, this just looks like a guy who could mess people up, right? And
yeah, every
like,
time.
And it's just because he just had a thick neck and everything. And that definitely is a correlation. Now, I hadn't seen the growth that you or like Jeff Nippard saw or anything like that. I gained like 1.25 inches, but it is pretty amazing that when most people can grow their arms, especially forearms, reasonably well without direct training. Like, I'm not saying don't do it, but like you can still see people who make fantastic gains there. Same thing with calves, people who don't train calves at all, et cetera. Neck, even after 15 years of training, seem to respond very well to isolated work. Like it just doesn't seem to get that same level of stimulation without direct work.
Well, you see a lot of professional bodybuilders and they're taking grams of gear. They are massive, right? And they have the same size necks as average lifters.
Mm-hmm.
I think that says everything. Well, like when's the last time you saw like a huge bodybuilder with a tree stump? It's very rare unless they specifically isolate, like that guy, Jeff King.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those muscles where, you know, you got to look at what athletes are doing. And that's going to be wrestlers, football players, anyone who competes in a combat sport. I mean, they consistently have bigger necks than all the best hypertrophy enthusiasts every single time.
Yeah.
And that tells the entire story.
So you said you just stopped caring, like you just didn't care about the appearance wise, or you were just so drained from contest dieting?
No, I just didn't care about the look, I guess. Also, I knew I wasn't going to be judged on that. And
sure.
I don't know. I just didn't feel like training it. I get very lazy with certain things.
Interesting. We were just talking about this, I think, was it the last Yeah, it was the roundtable we had just done with Jeff and NH and Abel about how it's very interesting because people assume that somebody who works out all the time, they're like, you know, always super ambitious or they're never
No.
lazy. But the reality is like Jeff even said, he's like, you know, I'm not that disciplined, you know, it's just like this thing kind of is something that he's really interested in, right? And some people are literally like IFBB pros and they're not accomplished elsewhere in their life. Obviously, I'm not saying that applies to you, but I'm just saying like there are people who are super dedicated in one area or super dedicated in another. It doesn't necessarily translate to all areas of life and it can go in phases, right?
Yeah, I find there's a general correlation. You know, people who are into fitness are, you know, they're disciplined or tough, but we're not like these crazy obsessed people. That's all we think about. You know, like there's something called a gym cell. You know, we're not all that. And just because I'm known for bear mode and neck training, I'm not thinking about being yoked 24/7. You know,
Right.
there's times where I don't give a single F, where I just want to be lean and aesthetic and excel at calisthenics. You know, we all go through phases in life. And to me, you know, even sometimes I'll prioritize health over gains, you know, with caloric restriction and doing some weird hippie stuff. It's like,
Yeah.
you know, or running for 6 months straight, focusing on that. And you know, your squat training is going to take a hit, but who cares? So there's times for specialization. There's times to just, you know, go hard on something else.
Yeah, no,
Yeah.
Totally, man. That's probably it's funny. I recorded two videos yesterday and I don't know if they'll come out before or after this, but this is probably the third topic within those videos that we're touching on, which is basically just how to stay in this for the long time, like the long run. Because very few people, you know, this is what the reason I respect Steve Hall with his pursuits, because his podcast is now going on a little longer than mine, I think like 5 years. And it's just natural bodybuilding, natural bodybuilding, natural body. That's it all the time. That's the only focus. That's the only thing that they really talk
Yeah.
about. That's tough, man. If that's the only
That's
thing
hard.
You're like pursuing at all times. Like I've seen, you know, you transition with obviously now just competing, but you have like the bear mode and like you're very good at some of the calisthenics things. And I think that keeps it interesting for most people. So to be doing
Yeah.
one thing all the time is tough.
Yeah, it's also hard from a content creation standpoint. So kudos to Steve Hall for that, because I would have a very hard time, you know, like when global events hit and I was making calisthenics videos, to me, that was a breath of fresh air. I enjoyed making those videos because people wanted it and I'm passionate about it. And it's like, let's go. And I was able to expand, right? But if my stuff was only hardcore bodybuilding in like a pro gym or something, well, I'm kind of limited. And how many variations can I show of a bicep curl, you know? You know, burnout is a real thing. And when I look at those who've been at this for at least a decade by now, they never just stuck to one thing. It's almost impossible. Like you got to be really good at what you do, or you're inviting other people onto your show, like in the case of Steve, that offers some diversity where you're hearing different opinions, you know, like different training styles, for example. But if it's just one, like if I was a heavy duty guy exclusively, what can I say beyond that? I'm going to make like 100 videos and then you're just repeating yourself. So that's why it's important for your mental health, your freaking sanity as a creator, the enjoyment of training, because who wants to be just good at one thing? If you ask me, I think being the jack of all trades is more appealing to, you know, your general audience. And just be more than muscle.
Yeah, no, man, I think it's a good message. I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, the longer I'm in the game, like the more I respect channels like yours and that have been doing it for so long. Because, I mean, I mentioned another podcast, I found a list of goals and one was talking about like YouTube video ideas. This was 2014, like I actually forgot about this years before I started the podcast. And one of the reasons that I never wanted to have just a YouTube channel was because I was like, I'm going to make 50 videos. And then what am I going to talk about? Like, it's a lot of the same stuff. The podcast is really nice because first of all, I just, for my own life, I've gotten to meet so many cool people and like make these relationships and everything, which is great. But it's constantly new content, right? There's other channels like, you know, like Nick Strength and Pat, where obviously that's more of the enhanced side of stuff, but it's news, right? It's, oh, what's new in the world, right? But if you're just like just fitness and you're just talking about it, you're going to I mean, that's the reality. If it's your job, you're just repeating yourself a lot. And I'm not saying that that's wrong. It's just, it does get monotonous over time.
It does. And you have to be really passionate about this to continue, because, you know, like when you're in this for a long time, your audience, some people will stay, but a lot will leave. Mm-hmm. So even though you said it for a thousand, you know, you repeated yourself over and over again to someone who just came across your channel, it's brand new.
Yeah.
But then in a year or two from now, they'll realize, oh, I've already heard this. And then they F off.
Yeah.
But as long as you're attracting new viewers, then it's, you're in the clear. But the thing is, you got to be okay with it mentally. Can you handle repeating yourself for years to come? And eventually that tends to lead to coaching, where that's basically all you do, you know, working with novices and intermediates. It's going to be relatively similar on a day-to-day basis.
It seems like a follow, like a trend a lot of people follow. It's like, start the YouTube channel, get into full-time coaching, decide that you're limited with coaching, make an ebook, sell apparel, teach other people.
That's the YouTube life cycle. Yeah.
Part of research, review.
That's what it is. You know, content create. I mean, you said it perfectly.
Yeah.
But it's good, you know, and you got to find which one of those things you enjoy the most. For some people, they can't stand the coaching. They'd rather just release good programs. Mm-hmm. You know, like I want to do courses, like proper video courses, fully like professionally recorded and everything, various angles, scripted, all that.
Yeah.
You know, I think that would be awesome, you know, as opposed to just selling an ebook. You know, I want the programs. I want it written. I want it filmed.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. And how old are you now?
I'm in my late 20s.
Late 20s. Okay. So, you know, you got a long career ahead of you, right? I mean, this is what you do full time.
That's right? What I love.
So what are you thinking? I mean, you just mentioned the course, right? Is that like, I mean, long-term, I know you coach, you have the channel and everything. So what is the long-term game plan if you had to think of it?
Well, the long-term game plan is to continue expanding the natural community. It's looking amazing right now. Like there was a time where I felt completely alone. You know, it was very discouraging. I even had some conversations with some top dogs who were also discouraged. They're like, yo, we lost the game, Alex. You know, so I'm not going to disclose who those people are, but these are big names. That's no longer the case. We're leveling up. So that's wonderful. I couldn't be happier for guys like GVS, Bald Omni Man, NH, you. It's amazing. So that's the primary goal. By the same time, grow my own channel. I want to get to 500K subs. It's looking good so far. And then just release more programs, because the last one I did was Naturally Enhanced years ago. And that was just all about bear mode. And I feel like I have a lot more to offer since my experiences have. I know a lot more about programming. I've done so much research and experimentation, you know, working with guys too. You learn some things. So I'm not the same person I was even 3 years ago, who was still level headed. So I got to release more programs, and I want to talk more about nutrition as well. I think I've proven to the world time and time again that I know what I'm talking about. You know, I self-coached, got second place, came in shredded. I have great physique. You know, everything that I said I was going to do, I did. I've excelled at the highest level at everything, my highest level. So I want to just keep showing people what's possible, offering diversity, and then having courses for a lot of stuff, not just, you know, something that's Naturally Enhanced inspired. I want a calisthenics course. I want a nutrition, everything. Like, just like my videos, I want that in a professional format as well. So, you know, grow the channel, level up the community. The best thing that I could do is be an educator, straight up. That's what I like doing, teaching people, showing how to maximize your progress and never stop, because I don't plan on stopping. I'm not in this for 1 to 2 years and I'm just going to F off, you know, get the money and okay, screw you guys. No, I'm not. To me, there's a long-term game plan, and it's not even something that I have to force. I just do it because I'm going to show up to the gym regardless. I'm going to film myself. I'm going to do what I have to do. So when guys say like, yo, this is inspirational, you're showing us all these things. Absolutely. But I'm going to do it anyway. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, the grind never stops. As cheesy as that may sound, it's the God honest truth. So that's all I'm trying to do, man. Just be the best version of me and get better with age. Never regress. And so far, that's all I'm seeing. No downsides.
That's great, man. So, I mean, before we close out, I just want to touch on the calisthenics aspect because I haven't seen it like a ton of your calisthenics content, but I've seen your one arm pull up was something I kind of followed there. And I forget how many you got recently. How much was it with the PR?
I did 8 1 arm pull ups.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. I mean, I'm pretty strong at pull ups. I mean, not like ridiculous, but I mean, I've done, let's see, I've done 100 for 6, I've done 45 for 15. I mean, these aren't like absurd numbers, but they're pretty strong, numbers, around 200 pounds, you know?
Very good.
But a one arm pull up was like, as I was doing, I was like, this feels like it's impossible to lift this weight. And so to do 8, I mean, that's just absurd.
Yeah, it's also body fat percentage. Sure. When I'm heavier, I can't even do 1.
Okay.
So first you have to build the absolute strength. For most people, it's going to be at least 75% of your body weight. And then you got to do the skill work while getting shredded. Like, you can probably do it. If you got stage lean and you did the drills for the next 3 to 6 months, you'd be able to do it. Says me.
It's certainly body weight's a huge factor, right?
It's a massive factor. And then height as well. You know, there was a guy, Frink's TV or Frink's Movement. He made a full analysis on the one-arm pull-up. He looked at all the best guys and compiled all their tips. He even did the survey where like thousands of people wrote out their stats. And he found a lot of correlations with body weight, limb lengths, you know, like the length of your forearm, body fat, how specific you're training, absolute strength. Everything is in there. So if people want to learn more, I would highly recommend they check that out.
Yeah, I'd be interested to watch that. And so presumably longer limbs are going to make it more difficult.
Absolutely. Yeah. The length of your forearm is what makes a difference. Like one guy pointed out in my comment section, when I lock out, the positioning of my chin is not the same as his, even though our arm bend is similar.
Yeah.
And it's strange, but there's a reason. I would say if you have a benchers build, you probably have a one-arm pull-up build as well. It goes both ways.
Yeah, which unfortunately I do not. So
there you go.
You know, 6'1", 6'4" arm span. So
yeah, oh my God. But yeah, that makes it a lot harder for you. But the thing is, look at Fitness FAQs, right? He is the calisthenics guy. And he managed to do this at 6'1" as well, I believe, or 6 feet. Heavyweight calisthenics. So there's inspiration out there. And there's a lot of street lifters who are well over 200 pounds that are repping those one-arm pull-ups.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, no, it's a very, when I see that, there's like some calisthenics type things that I'm not that impressed by because I see people who are like, for instance, like a muscle up. I don't know, like I've seen too many people who I find very physically unimpressive.
I agree. With,
that I'm just like, well, it's just got to be the technique.
Yeah.
But when I see a one-arm pull-up, I'm like, damn, like that's pretty legit.
There's some stuff you can't fake. Strength is strength. And the one-arm pull-up is one of them. Like even when you look at my technique, it's not that impressive. I'm flailing all over the place, but the lat strength is there and you see it. So a muscle up, it's like Olympic lifting. Yeah. You know, once you get that forward lean, come back, false grip, there's a lot of skinny guys that can do it. My friend who's 120 pounds can do over 10, no problem. But he can't do 25 pull-ups.
Right.
Even though you would think like, okay, you can do all these muscle ups. You must have an insane pull-up count. You can hit 30 to 50. No, a lot of these guys, it's actually similar numbers. If they're the skinny dudes who we're talking about.
Sure. All right, man. Well, I'm glad we got to catch up. Congratulations on a great appearance and, you know, a great showing.
Thank you,
Dave. That you're able to push that hard. So I'm sure people know your channel, but where can people find you?
They can find me on the Alex Leonidas YouTube page. Also Alex Leonidas Official on Instagram and TikTok and alexleonidas.com. So thanks for having me on, Dave. It's always a pleasure speaking with you. And more good stuff coming soon.
Awesome, man.